Welcome to The Rock. I'm Josh Whitney. We are about 21 messages into our topical study of the book of Proverbs. Next week is going to be the last message of this series. It's been an amazing series. I've personally enjoyed it a lot. And then after that, we're going to start a four-week series on family and marriage, which I'm very excited about. The book of Proverbs was written by King Solomon, and you remember that God gave Solomon supernatural wisdom, and so he was the wisest person who ever lived. And he wrote this book, Proverbs, to teach his son how to be wise. And Proverbs just gives us wisdom to live life skillfully. We're going to look at God's wisdom related to the topic of adultery. But as I got into this, because you're like, I'm single, not applicable. You could be the cause of adultery, which would make it very applicable to your life. And as I got into this and studied the verses, it expanded to lust and modesty and pornography, and it's just all of it. So it's for everyone. And if there are any little kids in the room, this is not a teaching for little kids. I would not give this teaching to my little children. We're going to be very frank. We're not going to be crude. But the Bible, these verses are sometimes shockingly frank. And so we are going to get into it. When you think of Proverbs, you probably think of those short, pithy statements that we've studied the last number of months. But the first nine chapters of Proverbs contain 10 mini sermons by King Solomon. And the topic of sexuality was so critical in King Solomon's mind that 5 of the 10 mini sermons that start this book are directly related to sex. Part of 4, all of 5, part of 6, all of 7, part of 9. One sermon after another to teach us God's supernatural wisdom related to sex. A little theological framework. God made us male and female. He made sexual intercourse. He did not look down one day and go, oh, what are they doing? Oh my goodness. He specifically designed sexual intercourse to work that way. He made it to be a powerful and enjoyable experience between one husband and one wife. One study found the hormones released in the human brain during sex are equivalent to heroin. What is crazy, though, is that God saw all of time, and he saw all of the sin and heartbreak that would come from the misuse of sex, and he still made it that way. If you or I were God, and we were like, look how they're going to jack this up. We're going to make sneeze reproduction. Husband sneezes on the ground, wife sneezes on top of that, and a little baby grows up right there. Not God. He saw all the dangers, and he was amazingly creative, and he's sovereign, so he made hormones and genitals and intercourse. Sex is talked about throughout the Bible. In fact, there's an entire book of the Bible dedicated to sex, Song of Solomon. So the biblical definition of sexual sin would be any sexual expression outside of a marriage between one husband and one wife. This would include pornography, premarital sex, homosexuality, adultery, polygamy, and on and on and on. Because sex is such a powerful thing, it's almost equivalent to heroin. It can be used for tremendous good in marriage, or it can be used for incredible evil outside of marriage. We live in an age, in a culture, that does not support or value, or in some cases even understand the Christian sexual ethic. Most of the books, songs, movie, entertainment, our coworkers, our friends, their plan for sexuality flies in the face of God's plan for sexuality. The Bible says that people that are sinning sexually are deceived. Our world is very deceived when it comes to sex. Here's a few examples. Latest romantic comedies tell us that we can sleep with whoever we want, no strings attached. Or they tell us friends with benefits is great. That's the way to do it. Bands have songs that tell us we're just animals, so we should behave like animals in our sex life. We have heard people say we're two consenting adults. We can do whatever we want. We're married in our heart. We're going to get married someday. It's my body. I can do with it what I want. I'm just looking at pictures. I'm not hurting anyone. We've seen TV commercials now that say life is short. Have an affair. Or what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And recently I came across a radio station where they asked listeners to text in the number of sexual partners they had had. People were like, well, I'm in the 10s or I'm in the 20s. Some people claim to be in the 100s. And then someone texted in, I'm 45, I'm married, I've had one, my husband. And the DJ says, isn't that cute? We are bombarded with sexual imagery. One study said the average person sees 14,000 sexual images or references in a typical year. And the truth is, in the Bible, it says that all people that are sinning sexually are deceived. And sex is so powerful that the misuse of sex is one of Satan's primary tools to destroy people's lives. Look at these statistics. 60% of high school seniors have had sex before they graduate. 20% of all pregnancies in our country end in abortion. 20% of babies are aborted each year. 17% of people have been sexually abused. 25% of people have a sexually transmitted disease. 25% of married people admit to adultery. And 30 to 50% of people admit to regularly looking at pornography. I saw on CNN, it said there are 4.2 million pornographic websites, which is insane. And right now, 25% of all searches on Google are related to porn. One in four searches on Google, you're looking for porn. And you've probably heard this stat, more money is spent each year in our country on porn than pro football, baseball, and basketball combined. Clearly, sex is incredibly powerful and it's being misused. And I know we're all over the board on how we relate to this. Obviously, there's men and women in the room. I have thoughts for men and I have thoughts for women. Obviously, a chunk of you are married and the majority of you are single. There are very specific thoughts for you guys on this topic. So I don't want any camp to check out. I want to be in faith, but I'm talking to Christians tonight, and those statistics on sexual sin are overwhelming. Because if even half of those statistics are true about the men and women in this room, that means a huge percentage of this room is struggling with sexual sin in one way or another. There are people in this room who are being unfaithful to their spouse, either emotionally or physically. Some of you are being sexually active and you are not married. Some of you snickered when I said 25% of all Google searches are related to porn. You're like, it's a good thing they didn't check my computer. No one laughs. That's not good, people. Some of you might be thinking, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I think I'm honoring God sexually. But you live in a world where you're getting bombarded with 14,000 sexual images or references a year. You need some strengthening. So wherever you are on the topic of sexuality, we need God's wisdom to live skillfully. So let's start with chapter 2, Solomon's first mini sermon. Chapter 2, verse 16. It, wisdom, will save you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. Her house leads down to death, her paths to the spirits of the dead. None who go to her return or obtain the paths of life. There's some important things in this passage that we will come back to later, but the main point here is that God's wisdom will keep you from sexual sin. The godless wife who abandons her husband, she is the gateway to hell. Thinking about it, driving here, driving my car, you know what this is equivalent to? Let's say you had 20 years of a clean driving record, no accidents, no tickets, and then you make one major mistake, you could kill someone or you could kill yourself. That is what the area of sexual sin is like. You go, I was honoring God for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and then I had this affair and just kind of blew it all up. Verse 19 is very sobering. None who go to her return or obtain the paths of life. The immoral man or woman, if you let them seduce you, they start you on a slippery slope you may not be able to come back from. Granted, this verse is a general rule, and there are always exceptions to the rule. God can forgive. God can bring amazing healing to sin. But once you sleep with the adulterous woman, it is extremely hard to find the right path again. Next mini sermonette by Solomon in chapter 4. 4:20, it says, my son, pay attention to what I say. Listen closely to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them. They are health to a man's whole body. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Put away perversity from your mouth. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Make level paths for your feet and take only ways that are firm. Do not swerve to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. This section does not directly address our sexuality, but its application is obvious. Verse 25 is the key verse. Above all else, guard your heart. Your sexual sin or sexual purity starts in your heart. If we guard our heart, it will protect us. If you allow your heart to linger over sin, over your computer, if you allow your heart to meditate on sexual thoughts about someone who is not your spouse, if you allow your sexual thoughts to meditate about frustrations you feel towards your spouse because of sex, or maybe you have thoughts in your heart that are driving you, frustrating you because you don't have a spouse, we start down this road to evil. So Solomon says, guard your heart. So why did you go to that website? What were you looking for? Sister, why did you talk to that guy that way? Brother, why did you put your hand on her? What was the intention of your heart? What was the desire of your heart? Guard it. If you don't guard your heart, you could turn to evil things. And I love how practical it is in 25, 26, and 27. It's like, look straight ahead, take solid paths, and don't step off the path into evil. It reminds me of a story in college. Our college group, about 20 of us, went down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina for the summer for a Christian leadership training thing. We had jobs, we'd work in the day, we went to teachings in the evening, and we do outreach projects and outreach days. It was a great summer. My job was delivering 50-pound bags of ice to restaurants all over Myrtle Beach. And the first couple of days on the job, I was riding with Christians and non-Christians getting trained. And we drive onto this one route that's right by the beach because it's by a beach because they called it Myrtle Beach. And all these women are strutting around in their bikinis, all tan, looking all sexy. And we pull onto this beach. And the guy I'm driving with, he's a Christian, and he spontaneously prays out loud. He's like, God, help. He does not close his eyes. He said, God, help us to honor you with our eyes. Help us not to think lustfully of any of these women. And I pray, God, if these women don't know you, they would get saved. I was like, boom, focus. The next day, I'm riding with a coworker who's training me. He's not a Christian. We pull onto that same road. He's like, 4 o'clock. I said, what? He said, 12, 3, 6, hot girl, 4 o'clock. His warning system was actually fairly handy. 4 o'clock, I was like, looking at 9. He's like, 9 o'clock, I'm like, looking at 3. That entire summer, driving around Myrtle Beach alone, in that truck, these verses bounced around in my head. You look straight ahead. You guard your heart. You don't step off the path into evil. There are so many verses in Proverbs related to sexuality. I put all the references there at the bottom of your handout. I strongly suggest you pick two and you memorize them. Take God's word into your battle to be a man or a woman of purity. Chapter 5, the next sermonette. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen well to my words of insight that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. That's Old Testament speak for listen up, boy. Solomon is anxious to warn his son. Continuing verse 3. For the lips of the adulteress drip honey. Her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's as bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. This is a reoccurring theme in Proverbs that this immoral woman starts her seduction with her words. There's a powerful connection between sexual arousal and our speech. The power of words to seduce someone or draw them in. It says her words are like honey. Imagine drops of honey falling slowly and oozing and seductively. She has a lot of false flattery. She's like, you're so beautiful. I've been waiting for you. I love you. You are not appreciated at home. I appreciate you here at work. Nobody makes me feel like you make me feel. You listen to me so much better than my husband listens to me. They're seductive words. On a different note, married people, do you seduce your spouse with your words? You constantly dripping seductive, I want you, I think your amazing words of honey all over her. Do it. And married people and single people, when you hear seductive words from someone who is not your spouse, do you run away? If you don't, this verse promises that it will switch from honey to gall. Gall is bitter. It's like vinegar. It's like pickle juice. Imagine you think you're eating some honey and all of a sudden you're drinking pickle juice. That's the deception of sin. It looks amazing, but once you get a hold of it, it is death itself. Verse 5. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thoughts to the way of life. Her paths are crooked, but she knows it not. There are a number of words in these passages that are double entendres. That means they're words or phrases that can be interpreted two different ways. For example, lips. In verse 3, they said it can take, you could take it either way. Or her steps here in verse 5. Steps can mean steps, or steps can mean her southern end. Her pubic region could lead straight to hell. Reminds me of sort of the common scene you might see in a science fiction or a horror movie. The guy is making out with the girl, but we, the audience, know the girl is actually an alien or she's some sort of monster, and they're getting all hot and bothered, and all of a sudden she mutates or transforms and she harpoons him with her alien tail. This entire talk is full of images like that, people. I just want to lay stuff in your mind. Verse 6 shows what a monster she is. It says she gives no thoughts to her ways. She's like, I destroyed your marriage. I could care less. Your kids hate your guts now. Didn't think about it. Verse 7. Now then, my son, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Lest you give your best strength to others and your years to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich another man's house. The best way to avoid sexual sin, it says, is to stay far from it. It's a little late in the game to pray for God to help you when it's midnight and you're making out with your girlfriend and you're undressing her and feeling her up. You're like, Lord, please help me to be pure. Probably should have gone home when the movie ended, buddy. Stay away is the best technique. What do you need to do to stay away from sexual sin? Do you need to switch jobs? Do you need to start ignoring someone? Do you need to get rid of your TV? Do you need some accountability? Proverbs says you stay away from sexual sin and you'll avoid it. And verses 9 and 10 show us the economic consequences of our adultery or our sexual sin. It's hard to, you read those verses and you think of broken homes or divorce or child support or alimony. Verse 11, at the end of your life you will groan. When your flesh and body are spent, you will say, how I hated discipline. How my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or listen to my instructors. The end of your life is the key to this topic, because you may have a lot of wild, crazy, erotic sex, but at the end of your life, it'll catch up to you. I did not listen, and now I suffer. When it says flesh and body spent, that's most likely a reference to a venereal disease like gonorrhea or syphilis. And that is ignoring the emotional regrets this guy clearly feels in verse 12. He has incredible heartbreak about his past sexual sin. No one sins without consequences. No one steps off the path of life without paying a painful price, either now or later in life or for eternity. Never judge a life in the moment. Look how crazy cool that guy's life is. One must keep the end of life in perspective to keep it all in view. Verse 14, I have come to the brink of utter ruin in the midst of the whole assembly. This verse speaks specifically of the public shame of adultery. Do you recognize these men? These are U.S. congressmen or senators who have resigned in the last year or so due to sexual indiscretions. We call those sins around here. Obviously, in the church, there can be confession and forgiveness and restoration, but life will never be the same moving forward. And on a side note, that picture of the congressman taking a picture of himself, looking all hot and like, look how big my guns are. It is a bad idea. Men, you do not send a picture of yourself to any woman, and women vice versa. Just a little food for thought. Okay, so now the father moves from the dangers of illicit sex to the satisfaction of marital sex. This section is loaded with double entendres. Verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in public squares, let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. Like we said at the beginning, God has made us sexual beings. This is talking about thirst-quenching sex. You're thirsty for sex, there's one well that should satisfy you, your husband or your wife. Your spouse is a powerful weapon against sexual immorality. Instead of running around looking for sexual satisfaction elsewhere with other people or pictures of other people, God made sex to be expressed powerfully and satisfyingly in marriage. Your marriage relationship with your husband or wife is the only sexual relationship that will satisfy. God has booby-trapped all other sexual relationships to constantly leave you feeling empty and guilty. So having frequent, enjoyable sex with your husband or wife will be a huge protection from sexual sin and a tremendous blessing. Keep reading, verse 18. May your fountain be blessed. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth, a loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Why be captivated, my son, by an adulteress? Why embrace the bosom of another man's wife? Like I said, God designed you to find true sexual satisfaction in the arms of your spouse. That is it. All other sexual relationships will not satisfy. God made it that way. There's a few things implied in this section. What does it say? It says, rejoice in the what of your youth? Wife. It does not say your girlfriend or boyfriend or fiance or partner or friends with benefits or whatever floats your boat. It says your wife. That means you should not be satisfying yourself with images of women who are not your wife online. Looking at pornography and masturbating is sin, and that is not how God designed sex to satisfy you. Verse 20, when it says embrace the bosom, that can be a euphemism for sexual intercourse. Men, you should be finding sexual satisfaction with one woman. That is your wife. And women, you should be finding sexual satisfaction with one man. That's your husband. You might be thinking, my wife doesn't want to have sex with me. She should be satisfying me like that, and she is not. Get some help. Talk to a godly couple. Talk to one of the pastors. Figure it out. Don't turn to your sinful sexual substitute because you're frustrated. Get some help in your married sex life. And unmarried people, you go, this is really not cool, Josh. Don't think that you can spend 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years feeding your lust and your flesh and looking at pornography and feeding yourself that way, and then you get married and you're like, ta-da, I'm cured. No, you'll build that habit deeply in your life, and you will bring that habit right into your marriage. It'll be a mess. You spend your single years learning self-control, and then if God brings a spouse into your life, you find true satisfaction in their arms. In the ESV, verse 19 reads, let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. In other words, you get drunk with how amazing sex with your wife or your husband is. And always, all the time, that means in the original, always all the time. You're thinking, tell that to my wife. Sex is not the engine of a good marriage. Sex is the thermometer. If your wife is hesitant to have frequent, satisfying sex with you, it may be because you are doing a very bad job as a husband. You are not serving her like she wants to be served. You are not being Christ to her, daily dying for her. You're not romancing her. You're not winning her heart. You're not making her feel like your queen. And you go, why is my sex life so bad? The thermometer tells you why. C.J. Mahaney put it this way. He said, we need to touch our wife's mind and heart before we ever touch their body. This is not a teaching on how to be an amazing husband. That teaching is coming. But if your sex life is not amazing, husband or wife, figure out why and change it. Because sex and marriage can be unbelievable. Verse 19 is one of my life verses. I am 11 years into my marriage and I am intoxicated with my wife's love. My wife and I have a truly satisfying sex life. It says, why be intoxicated with another man's wife? The girls you see online, the girls you see in strip clubs, the people that you are fantasizing about in your mind, they are someone else's spouse. And God says, do not be intoxicated by them. One time I was visiting a job site, and across the road there was a strip club. And it's like the middle of the afternoon, and this open-top Jeep pulls up, and the husband or guy's driving it. The woman's there. There's two car seats in the back of the Jeep with kids in it. The lady jumps out, walks into the strip club, and the guy drives away with the two kids. She's going to work for the night. I thought, every guy that goes into that club this afternoon and evening is going to be lusting after another man's wife. And God says, that is wrong. You do not do that. The girls you look at online are another man's wife. That brings us to verse 21. Why does it matter? For a man's ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all of his past. The evil deeds of a wicked man ensnare him. The cords of his sin hold him fast. He will die for his lack of discipline, led astray by his own great folly. Why does it matter? The porn you looked at online, the girl that you took on a date and slept with, the man you are flirting with at work who is not your husband, because God sees all of it. Are you living to please your flesh or to please God? Verse 21 gives us a very practical reason why we should be sexually pure. Because God is watching us and he will hold us accountable. Nobody saw us. It was dark, Josh. God has night vision goggles. God sees all. He sees everything that was on your computer, even though you deleted your internet history. He sees you in your hotel room when you're alone. He sees you with your boyfriend late at night. If there is no God, who cares how we express ourselves sexually? You do whatever you want to do. But if God exists and he has spoken about what he expects of us sexually, then, oh my goodness, this is critically important. God says if you do not break yourself free from this habit, it could drag you to hell. J. Adams put it this way. It reminds me of that scene at the end of Spider-Man 3 where the black symbiote covers that Brock guy. And it's like controlling him and destroying him. Sinful habits are hard to break, but they, if they are not broken, they will bind the client ever more tightly. He will be held fast by the ropes of his own sin. He finds that sin spirals in a downward cycle, pulling him along. He's captured and tied up by sin's ever-tightening cords. At length, he becomes sin's slave. That is what your sin will do to you if you do not get rid of it and turn to God. So that concludes the sermonette in chapter 5. Stay away from the immoral woman. You find true satisfaction in the arm of your husband or your wife. But then Solomon decides to get right back into it in chapter 6. I could see his son like, I get it, Dad. Stay away from the immoral woman. He's like, son, sit down, be quiet, I have some more things to tell you. And I appreciate Solomon's urgency on this topic. He knows it's critical, so he just keeps beating the drum chapter after chapter. Parents, sex education is your job. It's not the schools, it's not the TV, it's not your kids' friends. It is our job to teach and instruct our children. This is what sex is. This is wicked sex. This is amazing sex. This will destroy you. This will satisfy you. Your kids are absolutely naive, and the world will eat them alive if you do not instruct them. So as we move into chapter 6, some of these themes repeat, so we're not going to go quite in depth on some of it. Chapter 6, verse 23. For these commands are a lamp, this teaching a light. The corrections of discipline are the way of life, keeping you from the immoral woman with the smooth tongue of the wayward wife. Again, we see the seductive words that lead people into sin. You must be vigilant to not even listen to the words. And you go, Josh, I don't have any people whispering seductive words in my ear. I guarantee you have it on your TV and in movies and on your computer and on the stuff you're listening to. Verse 25 is a critical verse. Do not lust in your heart after her beauty or let her captivate you with her eyes. She's got some hot eye makeup going, I guess. For the prostitute reduces you to a loaf of bread and the adulteress preys upon your very life. That verse means that adultery and prostitution are both bad. One's just going to cost you more. This is in no way an endorsement of prostitution. Just like verse 30, which we'll read in a couple minutes, is not an endorsement of stealing. It's just telling us they're both bad. One's going to really be costly. Like I said, sin is attractive. Sin is hot. She is beautiful. He says, don't lust after her beauty. Her eyes, her beauty, her words will captivate you and draw you in. If she was like this hideous, shriveled up witch, he's like, come here, my handsome. You'd be like, I stay away from this sin garbage. But sin is beautiful. We read verse 25. Do not lust in your heart after her beauty. Lust, what is lust? Lust is sexual desire for that dishonors God, that is for a person or... Let me rewind that. 3, 2, 1. Lust is a sexual desire that dishonors the person and God. You should have a strong sexual desire for your wife or your husband. The previous chapter made that very clear. Do not desire or lust after someone who is not your spouse. And like I said, there's 14,000 opportunities a year for you to lust. Sexual sin starts as lust, this sinful desire for someone else. Porn and sinning in our thought life are the first steps to the consequences here in verse 27. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? So is he who sleeps with another man's wife. No one who touches her will go unpunished. These coals were used to cook food and to melt metal. Bruce Weltke put it this way. He said, whoever touches this hot woman will burn more than his fingertips. Coals like this will burn you and they will scar you for life. Even if by some remote chance your sin is not discovered in this life, it will be accounted for when you die. Verse 30. Men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his hunger when he is starving, yet if he is caught, he must pay sevenfold, though it cost him all the wealth of his house. But a man who commits adultery lacks judgment. Whoever does so destroys himself, blows in disgrace or his lot. His shame will never be wiped away. For jealousy arouses a husband's fury. He will show no mercy when he takes revenge. He will accept no compensation. He will refuse the bribe, however great it is. This just means people kind of understand if a thief is stealing when he's starving, but they go, you still need to pay back what you stole. Sexual immorality, the costs are much steeper. Son, you must not commit adultery because the price is too severe. Man, she felt really nice, but the beatings I received afterward were not that nice. I mentioned this teaching to a friend of mine. He said, oh, you've got to hear the story of my uncle. He said, my uncle is a sad example of a man who destroyed his life. His uncle was committing adultery with a coworker, and his wife caught him. His wife divorced him, and she subsequently got into drugs. He has 3 kids. His daughter got into meth and has been in and out of rehab for 10 years, and he does not know where his daughter is right now. One of his sons had a psychotic breakdown and was hospitalized. His other son has totally disowned his father and has absolutely no communication with him. And then the uncle married the woman that he had committed adultery with. They had a couple kids, and now that marriage is breaking down, and he thinks that his second wife is cheating on him with someone else. My friend saw his uncle and he said he's gained a ton of weight and he was absolutely miserable. What a heartbreaking picture of a man destroying his life through his sin. But I am sure they had some great sex before they got caught. Ha ha! Verse 32, the man who commits adultery destroys himself. It is a sobering exercise, but in my own life I thought through what would be the consequences if I had an affair, if I cheated on my wife. I would harm the reputation of Christ. I would have to face Jesus someday and explain what I did. I would break the heart of my best friend in the whole world, Krista. I would bring untold pain and suffering to my 5 kids, Kale, Aiden, Haley, Elias, and McLean. I would face the shame of you guys, my friends, and my family, and my reputation and witness for Christ would be ruined. It's hard even talking about that in a hypothetical. And the first step down the road of destruction is lusting after her beauty. Josh, if it's just in my head, what does it matter? If I just think about him or her sexually, who does that hurt? Jesus spoke on that. He said, you may have heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. Better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Jesus knows the consequences of failure in this area, so he says you do not lose this battle against your sin and lust. He says you win the war. You do not lust after her. Lust is the first step of the total destruction of your life. Thank Jesus, there is forgiveness of sin in Christ. There can be healing and restoration and amazing miracles. I know men who have sinned horribly and they've committed adultery. God, they repented, they turned to Christ, they got on their knees, they begged forgiveness of their wife and kids. God stepped in and saved the day, and their wife kept them and their kids still love them. But they are the exception. They are not the rule. You start down this road, which starts with lust. You could end with an angry husband taking a baseball bat to the side of your head. Verse 34 and 35 say that very thing. Nothing will stop this husband. You sleep with her, her husband may kill you. Don't see this movie. But Kyle Reese said in Terminator, talking about the Terminator, he said, listen and understand, that Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear, and it absolutely will not stop ever until you are dead. That's describing the Terminator, and that could very easily be describing the husband of the woman that you committed adultery with. Okay, one more sermonette from Dad, chapter 7. The boy's like, all right, Dad, I won't even lust about her. Dad, with tears in his eyes, says, son, I have more thoughts for you. You need to stay in your seat, boy. Chapter 7, verse 4. Say to wisdom, you are my sister. Call understanding your kinsmen. They will keep you from the adulteress, with the wayward wife, with her seductive words. Again, it starts with speech. Now we're moving into verse 6, which is where the dad is going to tell his son a story where he exposes the seduction techniques of the adulteress. Verse 6. At the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice or the blinds. There's the guy walking down the road. I saw among the simple. I noticed among the young men a youth who lacked judgment. This dimwit, he doesn't have a real strong conviction of doing right or wrong, and he puts himself in a bad situation. Keep reading. Verse 8. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night was setting in. He put himself, maybe unwittingly, maybe kind of half thinking, not thinking, he put himself in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's alone at his computer at night with nothing really to do. He's hanging out with a girl and they've had too much to drink. He's starting to flirt with the secretary at work. He's starting to make jokes with her and make her, because he just wants to see if there's anything there. He's not busy working hard at his job, loving the brothers, serving the church. He's wasting time. And then he gets hit with the daily double combination of temptation and opportunity. Verse 10. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute with crafty intent. Dressed like a prostitute. Women, this is not a talk on modesty. That is a different teaching. But our world tells you if you do not dress like a prostitute, then you are not attractive. I read some great questions by Carolyn Mahaney related to dress for women. I thought they were very good. She wrote, whose approval and attention are you craving with your dress, God or men? Who inspires your dress, or who do you dress like? Is the word of God your standard or the latest fashion? With your clothing, are you guilty of exposing intimate parts of the body or emphasizing private or alluring parts of the body? Do your clothing reveal an allegiance to the gospel, or is there a contradiction between your profession of faith and your practice of godliness? And finally, what do your clothes say about your heart, women? Just some questions to consider, because our world tells you you need to dress like a prostitute to look fashionable. So in your attempt to look hot or to look attractive, did you come to church tonight and there's some Christian brother who's trying to worship God and trying to learn about God, and he is thinking sexual thoughts because of what you are wearing right now? Women, it may be worth finding a godly woman in this church who's married because she has insights into the male mind and saying, let's have a very frank conversation about what I wear. Just some things to consider, ladies, because you do not want to be the adulteress. Verse 11, she is loud, the adulteress, and defiant. Her feet never stay home, now in the street, now in the squares. At every corner she looks, she took a hold of him and kissed him with a brazen face. She said, I have fellowship offerings at my home. Today I have fulfilled my vows. This parasitic woman's aim in life is not to honor God or love her husband or serve her church. She lives to feed her lust. She's sexually aggressive. She's wearing a hot dress, and she propositions him. Solomon says, you beware of that woman. She is dangerous. And you know that is the exact opposite of what our world would tell us to do in this situation. Dude, are you kidding me? Some hot married chick was coming on to you? Oh my goodness, do it! In verse 14, she's religious. She has vows and fellowship and stuff. Mom will like her. She's a religious girl. She continues to speak in verse 15. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and I found you. Again, she flatters with her words. I was looking for you. You're so smart. You're so funny. You pay attention to me. My husband doesn't pursue me. You are kinder than my husband. You're funny. You're handsome. She flatters him. But the truth is, she would say this to any idiot who listened to her. I got an email a couple days ago. It read, howdy, beautiful. I thought you looked stunning in those pics on your profile, babe. I'm on Messenger if you want to talk in private. Drop me a message. I'm online right now. XOXO, which means hug, kiss, hug, kiss. Before I deleted the email, I noticed that she had sent it to 7 other email addresses. The adulteress continues in verse 16. She says, I've covered my bed with colored linen from Egypt. I perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. That just means I have silk sheets on my bed. I've got some lotions and some candles and some oil, and I'm going to do some things that blow your mind, cowboy. Verse 19, she says, my husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and will not be home till full moon. With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. She won. She seduced him. Her final seduction is no one will ever know. That's Bible speak for what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But the truth is, if her husband came home, she would jump up, scream rape, and she would let her husband beat this boy. She's hot. She's available. She comes on to him. She flatters him. She promises to blow his mind. And she says, nobody will ever know. And so he makes an impulsive decision. He's thinking with his hormones. Verse 22, all at once he followed her like an ox going to slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life. Now then, my son, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave leading down to the chambers of death. What a sad conclusion. All of these analogies of animals getting slaughtered or killed. The man who follows the seductress into sexual sin is like an animal getting slaughtered. He's thinking with his animal lust instead of his intellectual or spiritual powers. It becomes a scene of pure slaughter. I grew up on a farm. I've been to meat lockers and butcher shops. The way you slaughter an ox is you slice across their neck so deeply that you cut through both of their jugular veins and through the esophagus, and the animal chokes to death on its own blood, and it falls to the ground, and there's this big pool of blood that just spreads out. I found a picture like that. I wanted to show it to you, but my better judgment kicked in. But that is the image I want in your mind, men and women. When you think about sinning sexually, I want you to visualize a big dumb cow laying on the ground, its neck slit deeply, and just this big pool of blood spreading out away from it. Bruce Weltke, a couple more, he has these great quotes. He said, stupid animals see no connection between traps and death, and morally stupid people see no connection between their sin and death. And then speaking of the adulteress, he says, She's not just a woman who seduced a simple-minded young man. She is a predator who has slain multitudes. Indeed, her vagina is the gate of hell, her womb, death itself. Because you might be thinking, that kid was an idiot. I would never put myself in that situation. But verse 26 says, it is a mighty throng. Elsewhere in the Bible, it says that many mighty women have fallen to the seductress. We can all think of many mighty women and men of God who have fallen into sexual sin and destroyed their life. So thus concludes the sermonette of chapter 7. There's one more in chapter 9, but we covered that a month ago when we hit bad company. So we're going to skip that. I just want to cover a few more brief proverbs. Proverbs 25, 28. These have additional insights. Like a city whose walls are broken down is a man who lacks self-control. We don't think in terms of walls. You did not have to drive through a wall to get into South Salt Lake tonight. But back in the day, if you did not have a wall around your city was totally defenseless. Any roaming horde of invaders could just conquer you. The city without a wall is defenseless. The man without self-control is defenseless. You go, I have no self-control when it comes to sex, Josh. You need to get self-control pronto. You need to memorize this verse. You need to pray desperately that God helps you build self-control in your life. Our world is like, self-control, are you kidding me? I want it now, I get it now. Self-control is foundational in God's world. Most of you listening to me are single. You spend your single years developing self-control that you can use for the rest of your life. Men, you stop looking at porn now. Marriage will not fix you, and you will bring your lust into your marriage and you will shipwreck it. In high school, I had very little self-control over lust and porn and masturbation. But when I went to college, God really started to convict me. And I started to grow in self-control related to purity. And over the next 4 to 5 years, God built self-control into my life in this area of lust and porn and controlling my thought life. And then I got married. That self-control that God taught me during college has been a tremendous blessing to me, my wife, my kids, and this church. You learn self-control now. And women, I have a thought for you. You need to be self-controlled emotionally. Guard your heart. You be very careful of any close emotional relationship with a man who is not your husband. What starts as a deep emotional connection with a man usually flows into sex. You should only have a deep emotional relationship with your husband. That applies to the married women, and that applies to the single women. Next verse, 27:20. Death and destruction are never satisfied, neither are the eyes of man. Do you see these three women? Our world would tell us these are attractive women. Shania Twain is a country singer. Christie Brinkley is a model. Ellen Norngren is a model. Tiger Woods' former wife. And do you know what all these women have in common? All of them have a husband who cheated on them. The eyes of sinful man are never satisfied. Lust for women other than your wife is never satisfied. One lie the devil tells us, if I just look at this kind of porn or this one more time, I won't do it again. Then I'll be done. Then I'll be satisfied. Or if I go this far with my boyfriend or this far with my fiance, we won't go any farther. That'll be it. If I flirt with my coworker just one more time, then I'll know I could if I wanted to, but I won't, so I'll stop because I'll be satisfied. But sin is never satisfied. If only my wife was a model, then I wouldn't be wrestling with my thought life. If only my wife was a model, then I'd be faithful to her. Then I wouldn't look at porn. Proverbs 5 says there's only one well that can satisfy you. That is your wife. Men, you were made to find sexual satisfaction only in the arms of your wife. You are listening to a lie if you believe you will find sexual satisfaction in anyone but your spouse. You need to stop it, and you need to get intoxicated with your wife's beauty. One more proverb, 28:13. He who conceals his sin does not prosper, but whoever confesses and renounces them finds mercy. I know from personal conversation and those statistics from the beginning, there is all kinds of sexual sin in this room. There are people who are addicted to pornography and lust and masturbation. There are people here that are sexually active, though they are not married. There are people in this room who are having inappropriate online or emotional relationships with someone who is not their spouse. There are people in this room who are committing adultery. This verse says, whoever confesses their sin finds mercy. This is not talking about like go to the priest for confession hour. We are talking about confessing your sin to God. Confess your sin to God and find mercy. Jesus has helped people quit looking at porn and quit masturbating for years and decades. I know couples in this church who were dating. They showed up here. They're sexually active. They're sleeping together. They were convicted of their sin. They became Christians. They repented. They moved out. Later, they got married, and God has blessed their sex life as they've worked through things. Whatever sin is coming to your mind right now, no matter how small or insignificant it is, you need to get it out in the open. You get off that road of destruction, and you confess your sin. I know couples where the husband or the wife has committed adultery, and God gave mercy, and He supernaturally saved their marriage. You need to confess your sin, no matter how small it is. You need to confess your sin first to God. You need to confess the sin to a trusted brother or sister, maybe a small group leader or a house church leader or a pastor. You need to confess your sin, repent, and find mercy. Sobering verse. 1 Corinthians 6:9. Do you not know that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor male prostitutes, nor homosexual offenders, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanderers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. And that is what some of you were. But you were washed. You were sanctified. You were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. God's church, this church, is full of sinners who have turned from their sin and turned to Christ. He has saved us. He's washed us. He's cleansed us from our sexual sin. That dirty feeling you feel every time you sin sexually, God can take that away, wash you, clean you up, and make you feel new. You need Jesus. Every time we sin, it's like we're committing adultery against God. But God is amazing, and He promises to forgive us and love us and bring us back. And I know there are Christians in this room who go, you know what, I found that forgiveness. I was a new creation, Josh, but I have returned to the cesspool. You need to remember who you are. Get up, get out of the filth, and you ask for God's mercies anew in your life. I have never experienced adultery in my family or my extended family. I've been very fortunate. But as we bring this to a close, I want to share a personal story with you guys. My wife and I moved from Colorado to Utah 8 years ago in the summer of 2003. We had a great summer here. We lived with Bill and Mary Young for a couple months. We were adjusting to life in Salt Lake, getting to know our new church. I'm looking for jobs. We moved out permanently, but there was about 20 college kids who came out with us for the summer for a summer outreach. And one of the guys was a lifeguard, Big Tony, was a lifeguard at the rec center out at the West Valley Pool. And he invited the whole team to come over to the pool after work. And so early evening, we show up. My wife and I pull into the parking lot, and my phone rings. It's my dad. Well, that's weird. I wonder why my dad's calling. So I answer it. My dad says, son, he's very direct, I need to tell you something sad. He said, your pastor was caught committing adultery. I literally felt like I'd been kicked in the stomach. I just started weeping in the car. I scared my wife. She said, what's the matter? Why are you crying? She said, did someone die? I told her, our pastor has committed adultery. We prayed, we cried, we went into the party, and I remember there, sitting there in the pool, just being absolutely shell-shocked. He was like a spiritual father to me. A couple days after that, I had to tell our whole team what had happened. I'm sorry, guys. I had known him for 8 years. I met him when I was a freshman in college. I was on his small group. Every week, about 10 or 20 of us college students would go over to his house. He had a great wife. He had a bunch of great kids. My whole freshman year, I was just hanging out with him, getting to know him. I grew to respect him as a dad, as a husband, as a man of God.
as a leader in our church. He and I and the other men in our small group, we'd go rock climbing and camping and out to eat, and he became a good friend. That next year, he quit his job. He became a pastor in our church. He was the pastor of the college group, and there was about 10 of us. And over the next 4 to 5 years, our college group grew from 10 to 500 college students. He was an unbelievable teacher. He had incredible vision, incredible leadership. He inspired this whole group of men and women to follow God. He led numerous people to Christ. His sermons were amazing. All kinds of pastors and church plants and leaders of God have come out of that church. I spent whole years of my life sitting in Bible study, listening to him teach me the Bible. Ironically, God used him to teach me about sexual purity. He married my wife and I. He was a good friend. He wasn't my dad. He wasn't my brother. I wasn't married to him. He was just my pastor. And it broke my heart. My wife said that I cried for days after this. I was in a depression for weeks. I had this reoccurring dream that I would see him at church, and how would I treat him? What would I say to him? It broke my heart on so many levels because his wife was amazing, his kids were amazing, he had this incredible spiritual legacy, and I feared for his soul. He stepped down as a pastor and he walked away from God. His wife divorced him. She had every reason to. And so far, one of his kids is tubed out. I felt betrayed. I was like, what was all that stuff you taught us? Was it a joke? Did you believe what you taught us? Did you believe those messages you preached? I believe he did. But I believe one day he got lazy and he started to lust in his heart after her beauty. One day he started to listen to her seductive words and he destroyed his entire life. Don't be my pastor. You are sadly mistaken if you think your sexual sin will not lead you to the same place. Let's pray. God, I thank you for your word. I thank you that it cuts us to the core. God, I pray that you would give us the courage to confess our sin. God, I pray you would give us the courage to tell people, that we would get it out in the open. Lord, I pray we would not lust after her beauty. I pray, God, we would be men and women who guard our hearts, that you would make us a church full of men and women that are absolutely pure. God, I pray that you would make the Rock Church just a stronghold of purity. I pray that no man or no woman in this church would ever become my pastor from college. I pray that we would be wise enough to make choices. We would see the dumb cow laying on the ground bleeding to death. And we would never go down that road.